When I was asked to give the title for the shiur, so the title was originally something about Poel Ocham and HaTorah and the ethics of it, and the organizers asked me if perhaps I had a title that was more appropriate for Beikes Ala Osar or something tshuva related. So we made up a different title. It didn't change the contents of the shiur, nor did it in any way change the relevance of the shiur to Beikes Ala Osar, because I believe that it is perhaps maybe the most important issue that certainly as a community and probably many of us individuals need to think about. The title was something to do with the ethics of Lashem Ha'aretz V'Malo'ah. The actual topic of this year is Lashem Ha'aretz V'Malo'ah, the concept of Poel Ochel Min HaTorah, which for those who are not familiar, I'll explain in a moment. There is a famous Gemara in the beginning of the sixth parak in Brachos, in the first Amud Daf Lamed Hamad Aleph, which I quote, I think, on the second side, which poses a stira between two psukim. First is the pasuk of Lashem Ha'aretz V'Malo'ah, and the second is Hashamayim Shamayim Lashem Ha'aretz Nasan Levnei Adam. So the question is, to whom does the Eretz belong? The first pasuk says Lashem Ha'aretz V'Malo'ah. The second pasuk says Ha'aretz Nasan Levnei Adam. So the Gemara answers, Kan Kodem Bracha, Kan La'achar Bracha. Before that you make a bracha, before you acknowledge that it belongs to God. So then it's Lashem Ha'aretz V'Malo'ah. After you make a bracha, then it's Ha'aretz Nasan Levnei Adam. I'm not a person who's usually inclined to make hakiras, and especially ones that don't have nafkaminas, but I'll pose a question, which does have a nafkamina, but not in the classic sense. When we say that La'achar Bracha, Ha'aretz Nasan Levnei Adam, what does that mean? Does that mean that once you make the bracha, conceptually speaking, now belongs to you, it's not God's anymore? Or does it mean that even after you make the bracha, it's Lashem Ha'aretz V'Malo'ah, but now you have the rights to use it? Now, you'll ask, what's the nafkamina between the two? Well, on a practical, very immediate level, the answer is maybe nothing, I'm not sure. But from a communal level, even from the level of individual behavior, the way a person looks at Ha'aretz, Ha'aretz Nasan Levnei Adam, has a profound impact upon how that person and how a community behaves. If a person believes that once you've made the bracha, once you've done that which is required in order for it to be mutter, then Ha'aretz Nasan Levnei Adam, it's ours, it's mine, that yields one set of behaviors. If on the other hand, one understands even after the bracha, it's still fundamentally Lashem Ha'aretz V'Malo'ah, but Ha'aretz Nasan Levnei Adam, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us permission to make, to partake, to use, but it's really still the Rabbono Shel Olam stuff. That yields a very different kind of individual behavior and a very different kind of communal behavior. I wanted to examine this issue a little bit through the lens of Poel Ochel Min HaTorah. At the end of the Perach of Gimel, in Sefer Dvarim, it's in Parshas Kisetze, we have two psukim, the Torah speaks about some type of agricultural mitzvah. Ki savo becherem reyecha, v'ochalta anavim kenafshecha savecha, v'elkei yecha lo sitein. When you enter the vineyard of your fellow, you may eat grapes to satiety, but v'elkei yecha lo sitein. You can't put it into your kelim. You have a basket, you have a little thing that you might pick berries and put them in. You can't put them into that basket. When you enter your friend's field of grain, kama, you can pluck off some of the kernels and you want to chew on them. But you can't pull out the sickle and chop stuff down. Now, what exactly is this pasuk talking about? What does it mean, kisavo becherem reyecha, kisavo bekamas reyecha? Literally, the word means to enter. However, Chazal understand, Rashi quotes this, the Targum quotes this, the Targum writes, translates Kisavo as Are Ti Tagar. That is not the normal translation of Tavo. Normally the word to enter would be Teol, to come into. But here the Targum translates Ti Tagar, which means to be hired out. And here Targum Unklus and pretty much all of the Mefarshim reflect Chazal's tradition, although not the only one, that this speaks about a poel, someone who's been hired to work by the balabais in his field, to harvest the grapes, to harvest the grain, And that person is given permission. That person is given permission by the Torah to consume from the produce with a limitation. The limitation is Ve'al kel yuchal lo sitein and v'chermesh lo sanif al kamas re'acha. Why does the Torah permit the poel to do so? So there is an analogous mitzvah which is not found right next to this. It's found in the same parsha. But Chazal clearly understand as related. It's related in Bava Metzia, in the seventh perek, that these two topics are dealt with next to one another. In the Rambam, in Hilchos Chiros, the last two prakim, one perek is about Poel Ochem and HaTorah, and the last perek is about this particular mitzvah. And that mitzvah is Lo Sachsom Shor B'Disha. You're not allowed to muzzle an ox when it's threshing. So you bring the ox into the stall where the grain is, and the ox is stomping on the grain, and the ox sees a nice juicy stalk, and the ox wants to eat it, or kernels of grain. You're not allowed to muzzle the ox. Why are you not allowed to muzzle the ox? Simple understanding is it's kind of a tzar balei chayim. It's not nice when the ox is threshing, dancing, in all this beautiful produce, it's a kind of a loig larush. You're mocking the poor, right? You're saying the ox can see the food, but the ox can't partake in it. And similarly, as the way Rabbeinu Bachai explains, then the person is working in the vineyard, and it's very hard to ask them not to partake, not to eat delicious grapes, delicious juicy grapes. You tell them, no, sorry, you can't have any. It's not nice. The Gemara, I think in Ksubos, tells the story of two Amoraim, all the Amoraim in the story. They would make sure that the people who were serving them, the hired help, the waiters, they would eat first. You didn't have people serving you who were hungry, because that's not appropriate. One of them used to give enough food for the waiter to eat, and that's fine. But the other one used to make sure that the waiter would get part of each of the food that he was serving. Not just you give him the cheap stuff that would sate him, that would fill him, and it would be fine, and it would provide nutrition, but part, he could sample every single thing. The Gemara says that Mar Ishtoi Elio Bade and Mar Lo Ishtoi Elio Bade. One of them, Elio, used to come with and have a chavrusa. The other one, okay, he was a good person, but Elio didn't come and have a chavrusa with him. So the concept of that is essentially Poel Ochel Min HaTorah. That din is not a din Toraisa. The din of Poel Ochel Min HaTorah is very much constrained, technically speaking, to situations of the same thing applies by Shor as well, things that are Mechuba Lekarka Bishas Gemar Malacha, and things that are Talish Min HaKarka Kodin Gemar Malacha. It has to be at a stage, the final stages of, if it's attached to the ground, the produce, where it's really fully edible, at that stage, the Poel Ochel Min HaTorah, and then once you detach it from the ground, until there's been a Gemar Malacha, where now it's Chayav and Trumas HaMaisa, so you can't eat from it, until that step, the Poel is also allowed to continue to eat. And the same thing, I believe, applies by Shor, as well in terms of the Isser Chasima. When a Shor is threshing grain, by definition, it hasn't had a Gemar Malacha yet. So that's the dinner of Poel Ochel Min HaTorah. There is a very interesting Shita, which I'll come back to at the end to talk about for a moment, is the position that Rav found in a Megillah Sfarim. He found this Megillah that was Nignaza. It was hidden away. Rashi says, because you don't write down Torah Shebaal Peh. Perhaps there was a different reason. And in this Megillah Sfarim, Isi, the Tana Isi said that Ki Savo B'Cherem Re'echa applies not only when it comes to a poel, but to anyone passing through the vineyard. It seems the way some Rishonim understand the Maskan of the Gemara is that maybe even Isi had, it wasn't Stam a person passing through, but the simple reading of Isi's position is that anybody, you're walking through your friend's field, you're walking, you know, through, you can pluck off a few grapes. You can't just stuff it into your little purse, your basket to take with you to make a lunch, but you're going through, you're passing through, you're allowed to take a few grapes off the thing as you're walking through. But that is not the position that's accepted. Pretty much it's a very distinctly minority position. We assume that, like the Targum, like the Mishnayos assume, ki savo b'cher mayacha b'poel ha-kosav medaber. Okay. The Gemara Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Zayin Amud Beis, it's source number 3, deals with a very specific instance of Poel Ocham and HaTorah. And I think that it actually may shed light on the way one views this din. What is the nature of Poel Ocham and HaTorah? The Gemara writes, Kedetanya, ki savo, nemar kan bia v'nemar l'halon v'lo savo alav ha-shemesh. Speaking about a worker that you're not allowed to let his wages stay overnight with you. So, ma lahalan b'poa lakasa medaber, afkan b'poa lakasa medaber. Not like Yisi. Kisavo is not stam, anybody's walking through your fields. In fact, I think the Rambam writes in Hilchos Chiros in Perek Yud Beis, the part of the raya is that normally what right do you have to walk through somebody else's field? So obviously, kisavo must be beheter, and the only reason you're walking through normally beheter is because you're doing work there. Becherem reyacha, says the Gemara, v'lo becherem nachri. This pasuk, this din, applies becherem reyacha, which means another Jew's vineyard, and not in the vineyard of a non-Jew. The question is, what does this mean? And there are two ways of understanding this, because there are theoretically two mitzvahs contained within this mitzvah, two parts contained within this mitzvah. Part number one is v'achalta anavim kenafshecha safecha. Is that you're allowed to eat? You're allowed to eat your fill. The second aspect is the elkel yachalosi pei, that you're not allowed to put it into your kli, into your satchel. Now, presumably, if you violate the elkel yachalosi pei, you're also violating the serv lo sigzo. One would presume that. So when the Torah is memayit reacha of lo nachri, what is it being memayit? Does it mean ki savo b'cherem reacha v'lo b'cherem shal nachri? Because in a kerem shal nachri, you're not allowed to eat at all. Or does it mean that no? When you enter a kerem shal nachri, you can eat. Of course you can eat. You can eat it when you're working for a Jew. And b'el kal yechatitein. And you can also put into your basket. Now, there are two sources that should immediately, you know, come to mind, but that should be relevant in discussing and analyzing what is this miut, what is this drasha. The first one is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, I think it's a Daf Nun Tes, speaking about Gezel Shel Nachri, not Gezel Shel Nachri, Gezel Nachri HaGozel, and the Sheva Mitzvahs, where the Gemara makes clear that a Nachri has to be allowed to eat from, when he's a Poel, he has to be allowed to eat. Why? Why is it not Gezel? It can't be Gezel because Mi'ika Midi. There can't be anything that a Jew is permitted to do that a non-Jew is not permitted to do. In other words, the Torah gave Sheva Mitzvahs to Bnei Noah, and we have 606 more. But it's inconceivable Onu, Shabana Mikdusha Kala Likdusha Chamura, should be able to be lenient and to be misalzo on things that a Nachri is not allowed to. That's a principle that requires a lot of discussion, but on the surface, that's what the Gemara says here. That's what the Gemara says. So, immediately, how does one reconcile, the Gemara makes clear that a Nachri, that the din of Poel Ocham and HaTorah applies to a Nachri, how does that work with this? And some Achronim really blur the two, and I think that there's actually a very important distinction. And it's an obvious distinction, not an important distinction, it's obvious. The second question is a drasha that the Gemara is going to quote a line later in our Gemara, which is the Torah says, Bekerem Re'echa, and they darshan velo shel hekdesh. In other words, this din of Poel Ocham and HaTorah only applies when it's a private individual's vineyard or field. But if it's hekdesh's field or hekdesh's vineyard, so then this din doesn't apply. And here, there is no question what this drasha means. The better question would even be, and I think some ask, why do you even need the drasha? Of course, you can't eat bekerem reyacha and kamas reyacha when reyacha in this case is not reyacha but hekdesh. It's a me'ila. It's a violation of being nena mina hekdesh. There's no pidyon being done here. It's almost inconceivable. It's, yes?
Is it possible that's a friend of the gizbar? Now the gizbar goes into someone's field and eats, and so this then wouldn't apply.
No, because the gizbar there would be, again, gizbar is not hektish. In other words, hektish, the gizbar is never, no one would say that, you know, the gizbar of hektish, if you're sure damages, he's sure that he's called hektish, therefore, and you're pater, right? I don't think so. Now, the gizbar is just a representative. When he's representing hektish, he can transact things on their behalf, but he's not himself, I think, hektish. Yes?
It's possible to say that, usually we say that it really would be gezel, but still, if you can take fruit from somebody's field, but like it gets overridden by the Torah, I mean, meila is only when there's gezel. So if the gezel is overridden by the Torah, saying that you are allowed to do it, and therefore gezel doesn't apply.
I don't think that's true that there's a meila only when there's gezel, on both technical and even broader considerations. Me'ila would be, there are two kinds of me'ila. There's the me'ila of gezel and the me'ila of hana, which doesn't entail gezel. So you could argue, but nobody does, that the Torah made a special exemption here. But it's highly anomalous from a technical perspective, because normally, once something has kedusha, a pidyon is required to be mechalal that kedusha. Yeah.
The call just saw in Me'iri about Shor Shalek Shindogach, Shor Shal Yisrael. And so there it says that Hekdesh has to pay the Yisrael, and then the Me'iri asks.
No. Hekdesh and Yisrael?
So it says Re'egu. Re'egu v'lo Shor Shal Hekdesh. There's a special meaning from the Pasuk, because there's only Re'egu. Then the Me'iri asks, why do we need a Pasuk? It would be Me'ila. So it says, no, because in the case where Hekdesh owes you something, then it wouldn't be Me'ila to pay off the Chov. Maybe you could apply that same. That's also a piece of rate.
It would still be. You would still require an act of pidyon. Hekdesh has to pay workers, but they have to go through a process of pidyon on the money. If you even look how the Mishnah describes in Shkalim how they dealt with the old ketores and so on, a really complicated process. So you still require an act of pidyon. If there's no act of, in other words, what the question is, how would the chil will be taking place here? Okay, so one could have made such an argument, but nobody does. Maybe some of, there are other teruts in that, you know, what we would have thought. But bottom line is, when it comes to hektesh, a kerem reyacha v'lo shel hektesh means that there's no din, not just the elkei yachalos yitain, but it's not the achal ta'an avim kenash l'chasavecha. So now, the Gemara asks a question. It says, kerem reyacha v'lo b'kerem nachri. Hanicha l'manda amar, gezel nachri asar. That makes sense if you say that Gezel Shel Nachri is Aser. So, Hainu de Itzdrich Kra Lemishrei Poel. In other words, there's a machlokas in the Gemara, the Rishonim here dispute where that machlokas is. But there's a machlokas whether stealing from a guy is Mut or Aser. So we all paskin it's Aser. Rambam says it's an Isur Daraisa. But there's a Shita in the Gemara that Gezel Shel Achum is Mut. So if you hold that Gezel Shel Achum is mutar, the way our Gemara reads is, why do you need the Pasuk? You're allowed to steal from the guy, so if you enter his vineyard, presumably you can eat, presumably you can put into your kelim. You don't even, if you weren't a worker, you could do that, certainly if you are a worker. So the Gemara says, Bishlama, if you hold that Gezel Shel Achum is aser, Hainu de itzdur kwa lemishrei poel. What do you need a Pasuk for? To permit a guy who is a poel to eat in your vineyard when he's working there. El lemanda amar gezel nachri mutar hashtag zela mutar pol mi boy. So the Gemara answers, you're right. Mokim la becher meyach avalo b'shal hektesh. The man da amar that gezel shel achum is mutar, where you obviously don't need a pasuk to tell you that you could eat as a poel, because you could even eat not as a poel. So according to that man da amar, he would just say we darshan kerem meyach avalo kerem shel hektesh. Now, the truth is, these are not mutually exclusive drushos. In other words, you can darshan both if you want, but the mandarma that says that gezel shel achum is permitted is obviously not going to darshan kerem re'echa velo kerem shel nachri. Now, if you read this drusha, if you read the Gemara the way we do, hainu de itzdra kwa lemishrei poel, that's why you need a pasuk to permit a nachri who's your poel. What exactly is it that the Torah is permitting? In other words, if I would have read that drasha on my own, becherem e'echa v'lo shel nachri, I would have said that the heter of a poel eating doesn't apply when it's the carob of a goy. That's if you hold gzeil shel akum is gzeil shel goy is aser. So the Torah is telling you, you know gzeil shel if anybody is aser, but now on top of that, even though you're allowed to eat as a poel, not if the owner is a goy. The Torah never gave that permission, and therefore you're just stealing from him. That's the way I would have read the drasha. But the Gemara says no. What's the purpose of the drasha? Hainu de'itz d'rechkra l'mishrei poel. Now, if the Torah had said nothing, kisavo becherem, I don't know what the word would have been. So v'achaltan avim kenash chazavecha. So what? And you hold that gezel hagoy is aser. What would you have said if it's a kerem shel goy? I would have said. It doesn't say kermeyacha. The Torah says, whenever you work for somebody, you enter the vineyard, you can eat. It doesn't matter if it's a Jew, doesn't matter if it's a guy. So you don't need a pasuk to be matir. You don't need extra reyacha. Yet the Gemara says, kisavocha lemishrei poel. What is it that's being permitted? Because of that, Rashi writes, kerem reyacha, source 4, v'el kel yechal lo sitein, aval kerem nachri titein. You know what the Torah is telling you here? When you enter a Jew's vineyard as a worker, you're allowed to eat, but you're not allowed to put into your kelim. When you enter a Nachri's vineyard to work for him, you're not only allowed to eat, but you can also put in your kelim. Now, if you're not his worker, then that's just gezel hagoy. That would be aser. Now, if you hold, according to the Man da'amar, gezel hagoy is mutter, then of course, you don't need a pasuk. It's not talking about goy at all, because you can do anything. You're a worker, not a worker. Eat, not eat. In your kelim, not in your kelim. It doesn't matter. But if you hold, Rashi says, that gezel hagoy is aser as we do, then the Torah is telling you, becherem re'echa v'lo becherem shel nachri, that you're allowed to put into your kelim. Of course you can eat, but you can also put into your kelim, if presumably you are the guy's worker. Rashi writes, by the way, in v'lo shel hekdesh, Rashi adds aser lechol. The reason why Rashi adds that in is precisely because if you were going to make an analogy between the drasha, becherem re'echa v'lo shel nachri, becherem re'echa v'lo shel hekdesh, you would have treated them the same. But Rashi just said that by nachri, you're allowed to be no saint. Not only can you eat, you put in your kelim. So Rashi has to point out that v'lo shel hekdesh, aser lechol. Not only can you not put in your kelim, but you're not allowed to eat at all, because these two drashas take two different tracks. The Ritva, however, says differently than Rashi. And not too many Rishonim actually comment explicitly on this. When you read some of the discussion in the Achronim, they attribute positions to a number of Rishonim, like the Rambam and the Rif, who quote, and the Rush, who quote the drasha of Re'echa v'lo shel hekdesh, but they don't say anything about nachri. They don't quote the first drasha. And the conclusion they draw from that, that some Achronim want to draw from that, is that the Rambam and the Rif and the Rush all hold, they all hold gezel hagoy is aser, and therefore they hold that it is, it must be that it is mutter to eat the kerem shel nachri. They assume, like Rashi, you eat and you can put in your kelim. The truth be told, that's not entirely clear. Because, as I pointed out before, that it is conceivable that you hold bekerem re'echa v'lo shel nachri, bekerem re'echa v'lo shel hekdesh, you hold both. You can darshan both. They're not mutually exclusive. When nizikin, shor re'ehu, what do we exclude? We exclude hektish, or do we exclude nachri? Which one? Both. So you can exclude both. One mir. A nachri is not considered reacha in this context, and hektish is not considered reacha. Only Rashi, I think, is explicit that the drush of the Gemara means that you, but by a goy, not only can you eat, but you can actually put into your kelim. But the Ritva writes as follows in source 5. The Ritva says, Hanaych lamanda merges el goy aser, perish, ika lamemar dahochanami, lo yochal. And this is the key point, and he spells it out in the next paragraph as well. It might be the drasha of the Ritva says of kerem reyach of kerem shel nachri is that just as gezel hagoy is aser, so too eating from the fruits of his vineyard when you're his worker is aser, because the Torah treats it like gezel. Why? So he says, because the ihu lav bar mitzvahu. This doesn't mean, obviously, he didn't reach the age of 13. It means really what the term bar mitzvah means. It means the nachri is not mechoyev a mitzvah. Now this already starts to shed a little bit of light on how, at least the Ritva, and probably many other Rishonim, as we'll see, understand the concept of poel ochel min ha-Torah. I'll come back to a little bit of that later, but basically, The Ritva is saying is that Kol Ocha Min HaTorah is actually a misnomer. The term should have been Balabayis Ma'achil Min HaTorah. It's not that the Pole gets to eat Min HaTorah, it's that the Balabayis has to feed him, allow him to eat Min HaTorah. So the Ritva says that since a goy is not mechuyev in mitzvos, he only has sheva mitzvos, and being machil your poel, letting your poel eat, is not one of the sheva mitzvos. Therefore, it's gezel. And as if the Torah didn't give obligate him to let you eat when you're working in his vineyard, therefore you are not allowed to eat. Since you're not allowed to eat, if you do, you're violating gezel. If gezel a goy is aser, of course, if you hold that gezel a goy is mutter, then you can't say that the heter doesn't apply. Bekerem Reyacha, the same way Rashi would have said, Bekerem Shonachri, you can't say that, because obviously if you can steal from him, certainly if you're his worker, you can eat from the produce and you can put it into your keli. The question, of course, is, how does the Ritva understand the Gemara? How does he read the Gemara? So here it actually turns out, if you go back and look at the Kisvei Yad, so if you go back to source number 3, after I printed the Gemara, there are two Kisvei Yad there. The Hamburg manuscript, which is a very, very probably a 13th century manuscript, Maseches Nezikin, Seder of the Bavas. The girsa there is as following: Re'echa lo shel goy, hanicha lemanda amar gezel goy osra, lemanda amar gezel goy mutar ma'ika lemeimar. Now, if you have the girsa that way, then the Gemara reads perfectly according to the Ritva, because all the Gemara is asking is, listen. If you say that gezel agoy is aser, so I understand. The Torah says v'lo kerem shel nachri, because normally it pulls olcham in a Torah, but not if the vineyard belongs to a goy, because then it's aser to take it. But if you hold gezel agoy is mutter, how can it be aser to eat from his stuff? You could steal it if you want. Certainly, you could actually eat it if you're a worker. And then there's another girsa, slightly different, but still would read with Ritva kerem reyecha v'lo kerem goy hanicha lamanda amar gezel goy aser haynu de itzrich kra l'maute poel. So this gear says, well, doesn't say that the pasuk was needed to permit a poel nachri to eat in the kerem shel nachri, but rather what it says is to exclude a nachri. Now, the truth is Rashi could probably still have these two gersos and adopt the position that he does, but clearly Rashi's reading is a more difficult reading to adopt unless you have the gersa that we have printed up in front of us in the Shas. Amongst the Kisvei Yad, there are 5 Kisvei Yad. 3 of them read like the Ritva could read that way, and 2 of them have the girsa that we have in the printed editions. Yes?
Sorry, could you just explain more time which girsa is difficult in Ritva and where the difficulty is?
Our Gemara, the Vilna printing, and it's the Munich 95 manuscript, says that Hanich Lamana Megezel Nachri Aser Hainu De Itzrech Kral Lemishrei Poel. If the drasha was v'lo kerem shel nachri, you're not allowed to eat at all in a kerem shel nachri. Why would the Gemara say ha'inu tskal l'mishrei poel? You need re'acha v'lo shel nachri to permit a poel. What do you mean? It's prohibiting your eating in a kerem shel nachri. So Rashi says no. It's permitting you to eat that which you ordinarily couldn't eat in a kerem shel yisrael, namely ve'el kel yachatitein. Once you take that out of the girsa l'ma'ute shel nachri, then you could go either way. Right, all you know from the girsa and the 2 Kisvei Yad that I present here, all you know is that the din of a nachri is different, but you don't necessarily know which path to go down. But based upon the girsa and the Vilna Shas, there's only one way you can go, which is to say that by a nachri, not only can you va'achatan anavim kenash chazavecha, but also ve'el kel yachatite. Is that a question? Now, how do we paskin on this particular question? So, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch do not say anything explicit. They just don't address the issue. As Yisrael is nichnas lekerem shel nachri as a poel, is he allowed to eat and put in his kelim, or is he not allowed to eat at all? The Rambam is absolutely silent. The Rambam does, however, quote the din of Hekesh. In Halacha Vav, in source number 6 of Perek Yud Beis, at the last part of the Halacha, in apolim ochlem mishel Hekesh shenemar becherem reyecha. So that, fine, that's not a chiddush. Now, what does that mean for the Rambam Shita? So I would say nothing. The Shach in Choshen Mishpat, the Shach writes, Poel ha'ose malacha, source number 7, Isa b'shas, b'chemer me'echa v'lo shel hektesh, v'hu adin shel goy, lo. L'may dekai malon gesa la'akam osra, kein hu b'shas, b'ayin b'smasif aleph. Sma doesn't talk about this. So the Shach writes that you can't eat from Hekdesh, and that everybody agrees to. And he says, similarly, you're not allowed to eat from an Achri, and that's before Shem Shas. So some of the Achronim here jump up and say, one second, This is not correct. If you look in the Pischei Tshuva, it's source number 8. The Pischei Tshuva writes, V'ayin b'sefer divrei mishpat shetama lashach b'zeh. V'chein tamar b'sefer shar mishpat b'tosefes biur u'masik v'kosav. Amna matzasi tana rabba de mesayeh lashach. I found someone who supports the shach. V'hu ha-ritva huva b'shita mekubetzes b'perak ha-polim. That's the Ritva. So we saw the Ritva. Certainly, the Ritva's position is out of the shach. Those words could not have been in the Gemara in the front of the Ritva. And as we've seen, many Kisveyat have a different Girsa. They don't have those words. Ach, lefi hanuscha shelafoneinu, upirish Rashi, no arguments there. V'horifa harambam, v'horosh, nira ikar daloka shach b'seh. Now, what exactly was the proof against the Shach, to say that these Rishonim hold like Rashi? So the answer is there's no proof at all. The proof from the Rif and the Rush is that they quote the drasha of Kerem Reyach of Elosh El Hekdesh. But as we said already, that's neither here nor there. That is not this positive. You can have both drashos in theory. The Rambam that he cites here is not the Rambam who cite that we just read, but it's the Rambam from Hilchos Malachim that speak about the fact that a guy who's Muzar on Gezel is allowed to eat as a poem. But as I mentioned earlier, maybe I didn't explain the answer to that question. Why is that not a question on our sugya? The answer is simple. Our sugya is talking about a Jew who's a worker for a goy, eating a goy's produce. That Gemara is talking about a goy eating from a Jewish kerem's produce. If I, a Jew, am allowed to eat in the kerem of another Jew, then Kal v'chomer, a goy who's working for that Jew, can also eat in his vineyard. Because me, I'm eating. That tells you nothing about if the goy is the owner of the kerem and his poel, Jew or non-Jew, wants to eat from the produce. And the answer could very well be that it's gezel on the part of a Jew and it's gezel on the part of a goy to eat as a poel from the kerem shel nachri without permission. So the Rambam just quotes that thing from Sanhedrin, that a goy who's a worker can eat in a Jewish vineyard. That doesn't tell you anything about kerem shel goy. So the question then is, what is the Rambam shita? You would have expected the Rambam to say something, and here's the problem. It's nice to argue from the fact that the Rambam quotes one drasha, but don't you think that the Rambam should have said something? Now, you could taina, again, if the Gemara hadn't discussed it, so I wouldn't bring rise from silence. Now, you could say, some would argue, that since the Rambam quotes what is the drasha and the maskana of the Gemara, kerem reyach avalo kerem shel hekdesh, and he doesn't say anything about nachri, you could have argued that the Rambam holds that what's the din by a kerem shel nachri, that Yisrael is allowed to eat when he works for the Nachri. But you know what you can't argue the Rambam held based upon silence? That the Rambam would have permitted you ve'elkel yechatitein. In other words, if the Rambam had Rashi's girsa, and he held like Rashi, that when you enter Bekerem Shel Goy, it is mutter not only to eat, but to put into your kelim. There's no way he could have been silent about this. If the Rambam just held, and I don't think he does, but the Rambam just held that Bekerem Shel Nachri has the same din as a Kerem Shel Yisrael. Ki Savo Bekerem Reach, and he wrote Darshan Reach of Elo Shel Nachri. If he had that same din, then he might have said nothing. He would have said, a Jew, it doesn't matter who's the worker. It doesn't matter whose vineyard it is. You're a worker, the Baal Bayis is supposed to allow the Poalim to eat. You could have made such an argument in silence, but not to say a new din. Because this, remember, would be an incredibly new din. A din that you're only allowed to eat from the vineyard if you're a worker, but you're also allowed to put it in shir kalim if you're a worker. Right? It's neither here nor there. We could see two positions. You're not allowed to eat its gezel. You are allowed to eat, but you can't put it into your to kalim. Or third position, that gezel shel goy is mutter, and you can do whatever you want. But to argue that the Rambam is silent, that he's silent and doesn't quote the drasha, because he holds that by an achri, ve'elkel yechatitein, he should have said something, number one. Number two, how does the Rambam paskin by gezel shel goy? Also, like the Rif does, like everybody does. According to the Gemara, if you paskin that gezel shel goy is aser, how do you darshan kerem reyacha? Velo shel nachri. So why then does the Rambam not quote it? That should be a stira within the Rambam himself. So I think that the answer to the Rambam, the answer of what the Rambam's position is, lies in another sugya, and it's hinted to by the Ritva that we read before. There is a long sugya, although unfortunately most of it is a sort of sidetrack, very side kind of rayas. Towards the end of the perek, towards the end of the discussion, Paul Ochem and Torah, source 10 on the backside, where the Gemara asks a very simple question. Ibayiluhu, poel, mishalohu ochel, o mishal shamayim hu ochel. When the poel gets to eat, is that because these grapes, this produce belongs to him fundamentally? Or is it simply a gift mishamayim? We might borrow the language from elsewhere, mishulchan gavoa kazach. The Gemara says, l'may nafkamina, d'amar tznu l'ishti ubanai. Give it to my wife, give it to my children. In other words, here's the deal. I'm working. I'm entitled to pluck some grapes. But you know what? Instead of me eating it, we'll just give it to my my wife or my child. Let them eat and I won't eat. I amris mishalohu ochel. If it's fundamentally his right, then yavin alahu. What's the difference? Who eats it? Ela I amris mishal shamayim hu ochel. Then l'didei zachi l'arachmana l'ishtabana lo zachi l'arachmana. In other words, if Misha Shemayim, it's not really, it doesn't belong to him. The Torah said, when you're walking through the vineyard, and you're working hard, and you see these juicy grapes, you can have a few. You can have some, maybe a little more than a few, but not achi lagasa. So the Gemara's maskana is not entirely clear, but the Rishonim's maskana, the Rambam's maskana is quite clear. The Rambam writes in source number 12, Poel she'amar tnu le'ishti yuvanai ma shani ochal, o she'amar hareini nosei ma'at mizeh she'natalti lechol le'ishti yuvanai, ein shomen lo, shelo zichsa Torah ela le'poel atzmo. And then, if you read on in the next halacha, Poel she'haya oseh hu ve'ishto obana vavada ve'hisnem balabaye shelo yochlu mimashem osim, they're working also, but he makes it tonight, he'll pay them more wages and they won't eat. Lo hu ve'lohem, harei elu enem ochlen. If it's children who are ketanim, or it sounds like avadim who are ketanim, eino yachol lifsok aleim shelo yochlu, she'enam ochle mishel avim o mishel adonehim. Those grapes do not belong to the owner. They do not to the owner of the avadim. It does not belong to the father. Ella mishel shamay. That's a gift from God. It's not owned fundamentally by the poel, and therefore you can be mochel on your own. Zuchus ben Hashemayim, you can't be mochel on somebody else's. The Rambam writes in the first halacha that deals with poel ochel min haTorah, and I think to me it's obvious the Rambam's position on Nachri. Ha-poelim shem osim b'davar shekidulo min ha'aretz, va'adayin lo nigmar malachto, bein betolosh, bein b'mechubar, b'yu maseim gemiras ha-malacha, harei al bal habayis mitzvah, Sheyaniach osan lecho mima sheinosim. Poel is ochel, not because the poel has a tzchus, as the Rambam's maskana is later. Poel mishamayim ochel, not mishal shamayim, not mishelo. Because this is not a tzchus of the worker; it's not an entitlement or right of the worker, but rather, it's a mitzvah of the balabayis that he should leave. He should allow the poel to eat from the stuff that they're working in. Shenemar ki savo b'cher re'echa v'kasso ki samo b'kamas re'echa mipi hashumu alamdu she'en hakasso b'daber ala b'sacher v'chi ilu lo schoro mihita lo shio b'cher re'echa v'kama shula shal midato ela kachu omer ki savo l'ushus bayin l'avoda tocha. But why? Why do you eat? Because mitzvah abalabayis she'aniach aso lecho mimashin esedot. Which is really the same formulation that the Ritva uses. So the question then is, why does the Rambam, why does he not talk about the Nachri? I don't know why he chose to not talk about it, but what is his position on Nachri? I think the answer is very clear. Not like Rashi, not the way that the Achron and the Pisrei Tshuva quotes say. There's a long piece also in the Torah Tanima, where he has the same Kasha and on the Shach and so on, and I think he misses the same point. According to the Rambam, the way he understands the Maskanas HaGemar, Mishal Shamayim Hu Ochel, it's not that the Poel has a right to this stuff, it's that the Balabayis has a mitzvah that he should allow the Poel to eat. And therefore, a Nachri has Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, and allowing your Poelim to eat is not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs. And hence, it's a given. If the basis of Poel Ochel Min HaTorah is the owner's obligation to let them eat, the Nachri has no such obligation, and obviously, You're not allowed to eat from a goy because a goy is carrying without his permission, because he has no obligation to let you do so. Okay?
Why do you need a miyad in the pasuk of bread eagle below?
So I would argue, someone asked that question, and I would argue that that is the makor, that's the proof, that it's not mishalo v'ocha, mishal shamayim v'ocha. That would be the makor itself. Yes? Yes, Nathan?
So the idea would be that shamayim only imposes a demand to, only imposes this mitzvah on the Baal HaBayis when there's some spiritual affinity
No, I would argue, and Rosh Hashanah before Hirsch, I think, does make this argument, if I'm not mistaken, not in the passage that I quoted, that this is not a basic ethical obligation. By right, you shouldn't have to. But the Torah here demands that we behave in a certain way. In the same way the Torah, there's nothing unethical about taking interest, this is what Hirsch writes, but the Torah demands that we act in a certain way of chesed, and there's no iser and demand, there's nothing unethical about asking for a loan back after the Shemitah year, but the Torah demands that we release it.
So the exclusion of the Nachri points to the fact that this is, super derogatory almost.
Correct, in a certain sense. To the extent that one accepts the notion that there is a universal ethical imperative, I'm not sure outside of Torah, I'm not sure that that's true, but let's accept that even after the Torah, that now is a universal ethical imperative. So this is not from a basic ethical imperative, this is supererogatory. This is Lifnei Meshuras Hadin. It's a din whose spirit is Lifnei Meshuras Hadin. No. Non-Jewish worker is allowed to eat. It's a non-Jew who doesn't have to allow any of his workers, Jew or non-Jew, to eat in his vineyard. No, there's no distinction. I think a goy is allowed to. The Gemara says beferish in Sanhedrin. I think the Gemara says explicitly a poel nachmi is also allowed to eat bekerem shel Yisrael. It's the Baal HaBayis' obligation. If the Baal HaBayis is a ben bris, so he's obligated in this mitzvah. If he's not a ben bris, he's not obligated in this mitzvah. So the ethic that's implied here by the Torah, and the way Chazal understand it, is not that the poel has a right, but rather that while these things theoretically belong to the Baal HaBayis, the Torah imposes an obligation on the Baal HaBayis to share. The position of Isi, interestingly enough, that I mentioned at the beginning of the shiur, also might be understood in light of this, and especially in light of the Asara Takanus of Yoshua. If you learn Perek Merubah, so near the end of the Perek, you have 10 takanos of Ezra, you have the 10 takanos of Yeshua, and the 10 takanos of Yerushalayim, or something like that. And most of the takanos of Yeshua actually illuminate a basic ethical principle. They are the usurpation of private property rights for public needs. Almost all of them fall into that category, where in other words, if I'm walking through someone's vineyard and I'm lost, I'm allowed to sort of chop my way through. Or certain types of stuff I can collect from somebody's field, certain kinds of wood if I need kindling wood and things like that. All of these things where one could technically say, hey, we divided up the land, what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. And all of those takanas of Yeshua, a number of those takanas of Yeshua, undermine that absolute right to property. They impose upon the individual's property public usage. And poel ocha manat Torah in many ways is the same spirit. But it's limited to a poel. But Isi says no. Isi says, I'm walking through your vineyard, right? I can't, have a picnic there, take my baskets, pluck the grapes, sit down, have a full meal. But, I'm going through. I can eat. I can chew on some grapes. Because, why? It's your grapes. But it doesn't matter. The Torah says there's a certain kind of spirit that we're supposed to have, a certain way we relate to our property, not to be miserly or not to be, we might say, from the people of Sodom, that Isi says, you walk through the vineyard, I can't have a poel party, but I can eat. Why? Because we share in certain ways. It's important, however, in understanding this, and I would say it's not a contrast. I think there are two points that actually come through. One could read this ethic as being, in the contemporary discussion, as very anti-management, business, right? The owners and so on. And say everything is about the workers. But that's clearly also not true. Because when you say that Mishel Shamayim Ka'achil and not Mishalo, that's basically saying the worker has no right. It's the obligation of the Baal HaBayis. And for those of you who are familiar, The Torah doesn't generally have a notion of rights. There's almost no such thing. The Torah has a notion of obligation. Obligations generate in their wake rights. You don't have a right necessarily to your property. I have an obligation not to damage it, not to steal it, not to do anything else to it. And that obligation creates effectively what is a right. In many cases, there are no nafkaminas, whether it starts as an obligation, creates a right. No practical nafkamina. There is, of course, as I said earlier, a philosophical difference in how you relate to your property based upon whether or not you see it as mishal shamayim ka'achil, ve'aretz nasan levnei adam, but we just have rights of usage, but it still belongs to God, or whether it's mishalo ochel, which is, it's mine, God, I made the bracha, it's mutter, it's completely mine. And I think that the Rambam, when you look at the Rambam at the end of many halachos, the Rambam often waxes poetic. And you figure at the end of Hilchos Chasidus, after these two chapters, one on Poel Ochel, and then on Chosein Parasa, you think the Rambam would wax poetic again. And he does, but he doesn't say what you necessarily expect. And he writes the following, source 15. Kiderech shemus har balabayis, shelo yigzal schar ani velo yakvenu kach ani musar shelo yigzal malachas balabayis, v'yivato ma'ak bekan u'motzi kol ayom b'mirma. Ela chayiv l'daktek al atmo bizman, shere hipidu al bracha revia shabirch samasar shelo yivarech osa. The poel, who is paid on an hourly basis, on a time basis by the balabayas, has to be makpid at kichut hasar, not to steal from the balabayas' time. Not a little here, not a little there. Not to take a little coffee break here or a little coffee break there. Unless it's agreed to by contract, the poel has to be exceedingly makpid. Chazal took it so seriously, they patted the poel for making the fourth bracha berchas hamazon, so it wouldn't delay him getting back to work. Tal v'chomer the harachamans. V'chein chayiv lavod b'chol kocho. Shrei Yaakov Hatzadik Amar Ki B'chol Kochi Avad Ki Yase Avichen. Mefikach Natal Skarzos Af Ba'olam Hazesh Shenemar Vayifertz HaIshma Od Ma'od. A poel's obligation is not first and foremost to focus on what the Baal HaBayis owes him. A poel's obligation is first to focus on what he owes the Baal HaBayis. Both sides have obligations and both have to carry them out faithfully. Rav Hirsch, in his commentary here, trying to explain why these psukim appear where they do. So he explains that these follow, not immediately, but this he explains that the mitzvah Poel Ochel Manat Torah is in the spirit of ribbis. What is the spirit of, what is the behind the mitzvah? So he writes that this parak closes with two psukim that are similar from a certain perspective to the prohibition of interest which precedes them. They too stem from the fact that God established our sort of national collective, and at that time, God kept for himself an unlimited right over all of our property. A zchus bilti mugbelas al kol rechushenu. And that's basically the way the Ribbono Shlom constructed society. And therefore, here, he obligates the Baal HaSadeh to allow, not the Poel's right, the Baal HaSadeh to allow the Poel to eat from the fruits of the field whenever he's engaged in harvesting. And the Torah also obligates the Poel to only do that within certain parameters. The principle that Rav Hirsch is elucidating here, and he talks about this extensively in Parshas Mishpatim by Ribbis, is the notion, the reason why you're not, there's nothing immoral about charging interest, certainly charging small amounts of interest. The Torah prohibiting doing so sends a fundamental message, is that your money isn't really yours, says God. Your money is mine. The Torah says this explicitly by Yovel. By Yovel, every field goes back to the owners. Why? I bought the field. The Torah says, Ki li ha'aretz, ki geirim b'soshevim atamim adi. And Rav Hirsch says, not only is this true by karka, but the Isser of Ribbis tells us that it's true by metaltalim as well. That everything we have, karka, metaltalim, belongs to the Ribbono Shalom, not fundamentally to us. We have rights of usage. And that language is echoed in the last chapter of Divrei Hayamim Aleph, when David HaMelech was overwhelmed by the generosity of donations to the Mikdash. So, unfortunately, I've said this many times, I've said this in this yeshiva, we stop reading the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim in Vayivarech David, two or three psukim too early. We really should add three psukim. V'atam Hashem Elokim modim anachnu lach u'mahalim shel Hashem tefartecha. Source 17. V'chi mi ani u'mi ami ki natzar koach l'shandev kozos. How is it possible, says David HaMelech, that we could have succeeded in giving all of this? How can we put all this together? Ki mimcha hakol u'mi adcha nasanu lach. Everything is yours, and when we gave you for the mikdash, we were just taking from your right pocket and putting it into your left pocket. And echoing the language of Bahar by Kili Haaretz, Ki girim anachnu lefanecha v'soshavim kechalav osenu, katsel yomein ala aretz v'ein mikneh. We're just temporary sojourners in this world. This world doesn't belong to us. These things don't belong to us. These all belong to you, God. Hashem Elokeinu kol ha'amon hazeh asher chinenu levnos l'chabayis l'shem kodshecha miyadcho hu u'lecha hakol. That is the ethic. That is how a Torah Jew relates to his property. Bein bekarka, bein mimitaltalim. And is encapsulated by Chagai Hanavi, li ha'kesef v'li ha'zahav ne'um Hashem tzvakos. And I've said this before. Unfortunately, there are some people who read the first half of the pasuk and they don't read the second half of the pasuk. They read li ha'kesef v'li ha'zahav. It's mine. They forgot. Ne'um Hashem tzvakos. And finally, it's really the message that the Torah sends at the beginning of Hilchos Tzedakah. The Torah, by the way, gives what I would call very practical, pragmatic reasons. There's what to discuss as to why we give tzedakah. The social contract, the galag al-chozer ba'olam, the fact that if you give tzedakah, you wind up with more, not with less. But in the middle, he buries the real reason we give tzedakah. The Torah says, it's not yours. It's not yours unconditionally. It's a pikadon that you have been given to behave with the way the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to behave. And so when I come back to my original question, which is what's the nafgamina between Aretz Nasan Levnei Adam, that it's mine unconditionally as long as I don't do certain things that are wrong, versus basically it's God still, but I have the rights to use it. It doesn't make a practical difference in a specific halacha. But it makes a huge difference on the way we will behave as individuals, as a community. Because if we look at our property as our own, deserved or not deserved, we believe that it's ours to do with once we fulfilled our technical obligations, that will lead to one kind of society, one kind of attitude. But if we look at it as the way we are supposed to look at it, which is that basically it's still God's, but it's because the last is for its own amafkin, and we give a certain amount to tzedakah, but the rest we're allowed to use in certain ways, that leads to a totally different lifestyle, to a totally different outlook of an individual, and in the amalgamation, it leads to a totally different kind of community. As someone suggested in the questions earlier, this is a kind of l'femishur sadin, and I think it's worth closing. It's worth closing with a comment regarding Yom HaKippurim. We all enter before the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we all beg for mercy. And we always ask for midas harachamim aleinu hiskalgali. And the reason we do is because if we were to be judged lefi midas hadin, we would all be sentenced to death. We would all be found guilty and convicted and punished. We ask the Ribbono Shel Olam, as the Gemara has, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tefillah and brachos, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hopes that his midas harachamim will overpower his midas hadin, and he will deal with us lefnim mishuras hadin. And if we hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to deal with us l'fnei mishuras hadin and not l'fnei midas hadin, we can only do so if we behave with other people in the same manner, that we not insist upon midas hadin, shali shali v'shalach shalach, but rather we engage as B'nai Torah l'fnei mishuras hadin. Any questions? Yes.
How does he square that then with being able to charge
us to go in? So, again, it's not, Kadosh Baruch imposed certain restrictions. We would say that, technically speaking, anything that the Torah doesn't prohibit, you can do with your money. The Torah said, you're allowed to take interest from a guy. As the Rabban himself explains in his Perush, I think, on Ribbis, there in Kiseitze, Ribbis, not taking Ribbis is an act of chesed. It's not an act of din. There's nothing unethical
about
it.
So really, if we wanted to go further, we should be charged to go in?
No. The whole point is charging ribbis is inherently ethical. Certainly a small amount of ribbis. But the Torah demands that towards your family members, towards B'nai Bris, you have to engage in l'fnei mishuras hadin. You have to do an act of chesed. That was only demanded with a Jew, not with a non-Jew.
So would there be any it's not charging to go
in? No. I don't think so. There is an isser, actually, but it's an isser drabbanon because you come to take interest from a Jew. But it's an ethical imperative. There's no ethical imperative because it's not an ethical issue. It's really about recognizing, in certain instances where the Torah commands, that our money doesn't really fully belong to us. Yeah.
I heard between the Rambam it means even a chiyuv to charge.
The Rambam reads lanachris ashich zo mitzvah asay in the Sifrei as a mitzvah asay. Most Rishonim say no, it's an isser asay lanachri benatu Yisrael, but they don't think that it's a mitzvah that you know really up then you're supposed to charge interest to a guy. It's a rishus, but that mitzvah asay of the Sifrei is a lab of bahabal mechal asay, and it's an asay on top of the lab for a Jew. I'd like to wish everybody a Gemara Chasina Tova and a Chag Sameach.